Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 804, Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part two. This is being recorded on August 3rd of the year 2014. The title of the program, like Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part one, that was For the Record 803, comes from the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk. That tract was published by National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance. It is about a Nazi takeover of the U.S. in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS, who have continued, have built up their economic muscle, and have bought into the opinion-forming media with which they helped to switch the U.S. populace to a pro-Nazi point of view. In this program, we are going to continue to examine how mediated information is being used to systematically mislead people about what is really going on in Ukraine. I've done 11 programs to date, 11 hours about Ukraine. This is the 12th. Please go to the SpitfireList.com website to access the audio files and the print files as well. I turn every For the Record program into a long article length description, frequently, as will be the case, I suspect, in this program, carrying information, featuring information that I don't have time to fit into the one-hour program. This is a hybrid form of broadcasting that is meant to be read as well as listened to. We are going to recap and further develop some elements from For the Record 803 and further analyze the shootdown of Malaysian Airlines Flight MH17. That plane was brought down over Ukraine. It remains to be seen how it was brought down. The U.S. and the EU is claiming that it was the pro-Russian separatists. They have yet to produce any concrete information in that regard. And the more time passes, the more I suspect that this was a provocation of sorts. Certainly, there are many things that we are not being told. And I suspect that one of the reasons for that concerns one of the first people on the crash scene and somebody who has been something of the go-to guy, so to speak, for both the media and for political and diplomatic interests as well, as is probably the case with this fellow and will probably be almost certainly be the case with some of the other Ukrainian names in this broadcast. I am probably mispronouncing the program. That is why I so often mispronouncing the names, I should say. That is why I so often spell the names out. Now, the individual in question here is Michael or Mikhailo Boshurku. I'm going to pronounce it Boshurku. It's spelled capital B, O, C as in Charlie, I, U, R as in Roger, as in Roger, K as in kangaroo, I, W. Again, B, O, C, I, U, R, K, I, W. I'm going to pronounce it Boshurku. Michael or Mikhailo Boshurku is the head of the special monitoring mission of the OSCE. That is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Curiously enough, Michael Boshurku is from Canada. He is a Ukrainian ethnic from Canada. And previously, as we will recap, he was also the assistant editor of the Ukrainian Weekly. Now, the Ukrainian Weekly has a very obvious pro-OUNB, anti-OSI bias. The OSI, the Office of Special Investigations, was the Justice Department unit formerly headed by John Loftus, the heroic investigator whom I frequently had as a guest, that was formed to look into Nazi war criminals living in the U.S., many of them brought in as through our intelligence services. John Loftus resigned his position as head of the OSI at the beginning of the Reagan administration because he found many of the people that he was investigating had been appointed two positions in the Reagan administration. The Ukrainian Weekly has a very, and by the way, they have archived their issues on PDF going back to 1933, has a very obvious pro-OUNB, anti-OSI bias. And again, Michael Bashuku was an assistant editor of that. In addition to networking with elements sympathetic to the OUNB, and it is the successors to the OUNB who are holding forth and dominating the Ukrainian political and national security establishments, Michael Bashuku also is networked with a Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood network that overlaps the milieu of the disappearance of Malaysian Air Flight 370. That was the plane that went down earlier this year, or presumably went down. We're going to look at areas of overlap between them. Bear in mind that Michael Bashuku has much to do with the public perception of what has taken place in Ukraine. He is networked on the one hand with both the OUNB related interests and on the other with Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood interests, which overlap the milieu, that's plural, of both the disappearance of Malaysian Air Flight 370 and with the September 11th attacks as well. Very interesting that that individual, Michael Bashuku, would be one of the first people on the scene of the crash of another Malaysian Airlines plane just a few months later. So we're going to begin with a CBC Canadian Broadcasting Company article from July 29th of 2014, Malaysia Airlines MH17. Michael Bashuku, B-O-C-I-U-R-K-I-W, talks about being first at the crash site. Michael Bashuku was among the very first people to reach the Malaysian jet wreckage, skipping down. Bashuku and one other colleague were the first international monitors to reach the wreckage after the jet was shot down over a rebel-held region of eastern Ukraine on July 17th. With no other oversight on scene, the two men became the de facto eyes and ears of all those who watched in horror from around the world. More than 10 days later, he is still one of a select group of individuals who has been to the crash site almost daily. And from ABC News of Simon Santow, July 21st of 2014, about his position, this article, OSCE describes process for identifying bodies from MH17 attack. Skipping down, the spokesman for the special monitoring mission to Ukraine, Michael Bashuku, says they have seen some remains and bodies stored in refrigerated rail wagons in the town of Torres, T-O-R-E-S. And again, as noted last week, there is a PDF copy of a letter from the General Counsel, Eli Rosenbaum, of the Canadian Jewish Congress, of the World Jewish Congress, to the Canadian Jewish Congress. It is intended, it was sent to Ms. Janet Bendon, or Bendon, B-E-N-D-O-N. It is from February 3rd of 1987. The letter reads in part, it's about Michael Bashuku. Dear Janet, enclosed in accordance with your request of this date is a nearly complete run of the Ukrainian Weekly published in Jersey City, New Jersey, from volume number 40, October 6, 1985, through number 4, January 25th, 1987. Skipping down. As I indicated on the phone, Michael Bashuku is a frequent contributor to the newspaper. Indeed, one of his articles appears on the front page of the oldest of the enclosed issues under the byline, Mikhailo Bashuku. The issue of December 15th, 1985, reports that he has been named assistant editor of the newspaper. Skipping down. I am convinced, by the way, that many of the unbylined Nazi stories, unquote, were penned by Mr. Bashuku. In any event, the anti-OSI, anti-Nazi prosecution bias in Bashuku's written output and in the newspaper generally will be readily apparent as you read through the enclosed issues. And that, again, from the General Council of the World Jewish Congress. And, again, the entire oeuvre, so to speak, of Ukrainian Weekly is available online. I have a link there, plus a link to an issue which appears representative. And, again, there's a very tangible anti-OSI, anti-Nazi prosecution bias. One of the main elements being pursued by the OSI was the OUNB and the heavily overlapped anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. Now, again, in addition to being networked with a pro-OUNB milieu in Jersey City, bear in mind that this guy is heading up the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe's special monitoring mission in Ukraine. He is from Canada. Last time I checked, that was not in Europe. And he is a Ukrainian ethnic, obviously deeply involved with the pro-OUNB Ukrainian emigre community. At the same time, he also is networked with a Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood milieu that overlapped the disappearance of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. That's the plane that just vanished in the Pacific. The coverage of that was, if I were really going to describe it, I would get censored by the FCC because I would have to reach into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary. We are being told that some commentators are saying maybe it was aliens or UFOs, or maybe it was a black hole that suddenly opened. Oh, really? Where did the black hole open? That, suffice it to say, is just so much fresh fertilizer. As we looked at in, for the record, 790. First of all, that plane appears to have been brought down or otherwise seriously inconvenienced by the pilot. The pilot was a guy named Zahari, Zahariye, Shah, capital Shah. He, in turn, was a political follower of a guy named Anwar Ibrahim. Anwar Ibrahim was a former Malaysian prime minister. He was a consulting client of Grover Norquist's Janus Merit Strategies, and he was a co-founder of the International Institute for Islamic Thought. That is an organization that has, and there are many links in the introduction to the material I'm about to read. The IIIT was one of the organizations raided in the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002. Those raids revealed a network that was involved with funding Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And furthermore, they were heavily networked with the Islamic Free Market Institute of Grover Norquist, one of the linchpins of the GOP right. Karl Rove was also deeply involved with the formation of that organization. And on April 4th of 2002, about 2 weeks after the raids took place, a guy named Talat Otman, a Palestinian-American who was a close personal friend and political advisor of both George's Bush and had been a director of Harkin Energy, one of W's failed oil companies, he interceded directly with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on behalf of the individuals and institutions raided on 3/20/2002. That investigation grew out of the investigation into Sami Al-Arian. Sami Al-Arian was a close political associate of George W. Bush and took credit, mistakenly in my opinion, for having carried Florida for George W. Bush in the 2000 election. I think the main credit there goes to the Supreme Court of the U.S. with an assist, as they say in sports, from Ralph Nader. When a grand jury was interrogating Sami Al-Arian about the International Institute of Islamic Thought, he declined to testify out of fear for his safety. Well, if this was just a religious organization, a think tank, why would he be afraid for his safety? The IIIT, Again, there's another link, grew out of a 1977 meeting in Lake Lugano, Switzerland, at the home of Ali Galeb Himat, one of the founders of the Bank Al-Taqwa, which carried an account that had an unlimited line of credit for Al-Qaeda. The head of Bank Al-Taqwa was Youssef Nader, apparently a former German intelligence officer and a fellow who, according to the Asia Times, helped the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, to escape from Germany at the end of World War II. One of the principal people involved with the Bank Al-Taqwa was François Genoux, a Swiss Nazi and one of the prime movers in the post-World War II Nazi money machine. Also an individual who had much to do with the post-World War II Nazi diaspora. Perhaps even more importantly, or perhaps representative of that, is the fact that François Genoux was the heir to the political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And again, the IIIT is inextricably linked with the milieu of the Bank Al-Taqwa, and the pilot of the plane, Malaysia Air 370, that, quote, disappeared, was a political follower of Anwar Ibrahim, consulting client of Golder Norquist, and a fellow who was a co-founder of the IIIT. Anwar Ibrahim had a sodomy conviction reinstated. Zahari Shah, the pilot of Malaysia Air 370, was present at the courtroom, and a few hours later, Malaysian Air 370 appears to have vanished after the flight computer was reprogrammed from in the cockpit and the transponder turned off. Now, that for some background discussed in For the Record 790 about that the Malaysian airliner. Now, again, Michael Bushirku, the first people, sort of the go-to guy with regard to the crash of a second, really the bring down of a second Malaysian airliner, wrote a book called Mahathir, 22 Years or 22 Voices. Basically, he edited the book and wrote an introduction to it. This is a puff piece biography of a guy named Mahathir Mohamed. Mahathir Mohamed was a raving anti-Semite and associate of the Muslim Brotherhood, and also, again, a former prime minister of Malaysia, like Anwar Ibrahim, one of the co-founders of the IIIT. And both Mahathir Mohamed and a guy named Abdullah Badawi, B-A-D-A-W-I, were protégés of Mohamed M. Abdul Rauf. In addition to an introduction to Mahathir, 22 Years and 22 Voices, an introduction written by Michael Bushirku, who also edited the volume, another introduction was written by Abdullah Badawi himself. Now, again, both Mohammed, the subject of this puff piece bio by Michael Bushirku, and Abdullah Badawi were protégés of Mohammed M. Abdul Rauf. He was a prominent Malaysian Muslim brother and was a personal student of Muslim Brotherhood founder Hassan al-Banna. In turn, M. Abdul Rauf, again, who tutored basically Mahathir Mohamed, the subject of the Bushirku puff piece bio, M. Abdul Rauf was very close to the IIIT and networked with a guy named Ismail R. al-Faruqi, last name capital A-L hyphen capital F-A-R-U-Q-U-I, another of the co-founders of the IIIT, along with Anwar Ibrahim. There's a blog, Unmasking the Muslim Brotherhood in America, that has an entry about Mohammed M. Abdul Rauf, some of the key features in this, skipping down. Co-authored book and regularly collaborated with hardline Muslim Brotherhood leader Ismail R. al-Faruqi, a mid-1980s co-founder of the Herndon, Virginia-based IIIT, long suspected of broadly funding terror. Regularly collaborated with IIIT and Association of Muslim Social Scientists, or AMSS, both among 29, quote, friends, unquote, listed in the 1991 Mohammed Akram Internal MB Memorandum outlining secret plans to replace the U.S. constitutional democracy with Sharia law. And another of the bio credits, so to speak, of Muhammad M. Abdul Rauf instructed hardline Islamic leader Abdullah Ahmed Badawi, who served as Malaysian Prime Minister from 2003 to 2009. And again, Abdullah Badawi wrote an introduction to the bio of Muhammad Mahathir that was edited and had an introduction for introduction by Michael Bashirku. More about M. Muhammad Abdul Rauf. Close associate and friend of former Malaysian Prime Minister and active anti-Semite Mahathir Muhammad, who in 2002 incited global anti-West financial war as, quote, a jihad worth fighting for, unquote. Rauf also greatly admired the, quote, accomplishments, unquote, of American Muslim Society, or AMS, founder W. D. Muhammad, the former Nation of Islam leader who regularly met Muslim Brotherhood leaders, attended their meetings, and accepted gifts from their chief donors. In July 1997, Muhammad attended the 22nd Annual Islamic Circle of North America Convention in 2000. In 2000, Muhammad also joined Muslim Brother and Islamic Society of North America General Secretary Saeed Saeed, that's S-A-Y-Y-I-D, S-A-Y-E-E-D, in welcoming Louis Farrakhan into the, quote, mainstream of American Sunni Islam. We're going to explore some of the Louis Farrakhan and Nation of Islam links of this milieu here for a minute, because I think it illustrates in many ways that what we're dealing with the Muslim Brotherhood is not Islam. And I don't want to be misunderstood as saying, well, this is Islam. No, this is a fascist organization dating back to the pre-World War II period that was allied with the Axis and then was nurtured by elements of Western intelligence to serve as anti-communist cadre during the Cold War in the Islamic and Third Worlds. Now, with regard to welcoming the leader of the Nation of Islam, both Mr. Muhammad and also Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam has really very little to do with real Islam other than the name. I saw just at a relatively superficial level, there was a press photograph of Louis Farrakhan that made the rounds in the early 1980s. And in addition to being dressed in a very garish fashion with what appeared to be a shark skin suit and snake skin boots, Louis Farrakhan was wearing a very prominent gold ring. Now, in traditional Islamic heraldry, men are forbidden from wearing gold jewelry or ornamentation. Men are only allowed to wear silver. And that was very indicative, I think, that Farrakhan allowed himself to be photographed with this great big gold ring. Again, Islamic heraldry, traditional Islamic heraldry, forbids men from wearing gold. They're only supposed to wear silver. At a more profound level, one of the elements of the doctrine of the Nation of Islam was that a mad scientist named Yaakov created the white race in a laboratory. Well, to a serious Muslim, that would be blasphemous. And I'm going to telescope and do my best to represent some fundamental aspects of Islamic idea, catechism or theory, those are the wrong terms, but Islamic religious principle. All human beings are seen when they are born as being, in essence, Muslim, as being part of the Ummah. Some are led astray by various things, but that is one of the founding elements of the ethos of Islam, that people can be converted to Islam, at which point they are welcomed back into the fold of Allah, so to speak. And again, at birth, all people are seen as, in essence, at a spiritual level, Muslims, part of the Ummah. Then some stray for various reasons. They can be converted to another religion or whatever. But that is one of the reasons why proselytization figures so prominently in Islam, because people can be welcomed back into the fold, so to speak, when they convert to Islam and become Muslims. By the way, I would also note in passing that Arabs are members of the Caucasoid race. They are not Mongoloid or Negroid or Australoid. Some view the Australian Aborigines as a separate race. But Arabs are Caucasoid. The notion, going back to the catechism of the Nation of Islam, the notion that any portion of the human race could have been created by a mad scientist in a laboratory would be blasphemy to a serious Muslim. That would basically be negating the realities of Allah as the creator of the universe. And again, in quite a bit of Muslim society, advocating something like that would get your a-blank-blank killed. I mean, you just couldn't say, oh, yeah, the white race was made by a mad scientist in the laboratory. No. But the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization, would be so casually welcoming to people who would be seen as heretics by any serious Muslim, I think is indication of the fascist character of the Muslim Brotherhood. And as we have seen in so many programs, it is part of the underground Reich and has networked with so many Western intelligence elements in the post-World War II period, like the OUNB, the Gehlen Org, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and other elements that we have spoken about over the years. So again, we're going to talk more about Louis Farrakhan inside, too. This is because, again, Michael Bashirku, one of the go-to guys, so to speak, for the MH17 shootdown, is networked on the one hand with the OUNB milieu and on the other with a Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood milieu that overlaps the disappearance earlier this year of Malaysian Air Flight 370. I would note from an actuarial standpoint, there are not that many airliners that crash in a given year. There are far fewer that go down as a result of identifiable, hostile human action. And it is extremely unusual to have two airliners from the same relatively small airline going down as a result of identifiable, hostile human action within a few months of each other. That is extraordinarily unusual. And Michael Bashirku, in his Malaysian / Muslim Brotherhood networking, is tied to elements that figure in the disappearance, unquote, of Malaysian Air Flight 370. And then he is right there. He is not Johnny on the spot, but Mikhailo on the spot, so to speak, for the OSCE, the Office of Security and Cooperation in Europe's special monitoring mission in Ukraine, and becomes the go-to guy in Ukraine. And again, he is networked with OUNB-related elements through his work for the Ukrainian Quarterly. Please examine links in this broadcast for further information about this. I would note, for the record, 782, we accessed information from AFA Program 14 showing Theodor Oberlander, an SS officer, who is also networked with pan-Turkist Islamic elements as well as with the OUNB. So this is something we have seen before. This concludes Side 1 of, for the record, Program number 804, Walking the Snake in Ukraine, Part 2. This has been recorded on August 3rd of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.